Part of the problem with that, like when I was in Minneapolis, busing and magnet schools are so prevalent that I would get, first of all, I had to get a hold of a parent, and then half the time they didn't have phones. Then the other half of the time, they were disconnected. If I did get through with them, and they were living across town without a vehicle, I mean, the transportation logistics were horrible. I think it's a good argument against busing.
That's just who kids are. That's who those families are.
Yeah.
You know.
We're talking kids that start showing up in October. And then you flunk them.
It gets cold outside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or Minneapolis has a reputation for having good schools for a big city. When I was there, we got tons of kids that would come in October, November from Chicago, Detroit, where parents were desperately trying to find a school system that worked and where they could get their kids away from
gangs.
Yeah. So they would be kind of an unknown element. So we got a lot of those kids in Minneapolis. And a lot of times they worked out because they had committed adults with them. You got some real, we had a pair of twins that we physically had to remove from the school. Actually, they went out in handcuffs because we got the police with them. They're very violent. where I was going with this, clear decision making on a district-wide level. We've gone to what's called site-based management in a lot of places, and it sounds good. In theory, I'm finding more and more teachers saying, I don't have the time for site-based management and teaching at the same time. Some teachers are finding out that this is just kind of a facade, that nobody really makes decisions. So I think the site-based, I don't know, do you have that in White Bear Lake?
Well, the word is being thrown around, and it really makes a difference what kind of principal you have.
Yeah.
And they may use the term, but how much in practice, you know, the theory really gets going makes a big difference. We have an awful lot of things that have to go through our district, like ordering supplies. And, you know, we're still, you hear about the abuses of the military and how the supplies cost just mega bucks for things that shouldn't. Hmm. And it seems like we pay top dollar for paper supplies when all of us are just chafing as teachers. Why wouldn't they just let us go to Target when they have these sales and we could buy some of this stuff for our classrooms, get better quality stuff for a fraction of the cost? But they don't allow us that kind of power with the money. You know, it's just drives us crazy. Why? I know. I don't want to get my soapbox too soon with that. There's a lot of other issues to talk about. But that's one thing that makes me so mad as a teacher. I just get furious when I hear how the money is being spent. And we are in a district that doesn't have a lot of money to throw around, and then they're wasting it, in my opinion, this way. And it's such a top heavy kind of system. And it seems like it's so hard to change it.
Anybody ever go to a school board meeting, a representative of the teachers? You'd find some parental support there.
Yeah.
You'd also find some support from some members of the board, especially after the third meeting when you said it's happening again and again and again.
We've just done that, and we've had major technology problems this year in our district, and we had a group of teachers and parents in the school board meetings, and we'll see. I'm still not convinced that a lot's going to change, but supposedly our new coordinator got, as they say, taken to the woodshed on this one, and there were some minor changes that started. I hope that will continue, but I think you're absolutely right. I happen to have a principal that gave me our tax-exempt number and said, if you need supplies, go buy what you want, use this number, and give me the bill. But part of that is he knows me. He knows I tend not to order everything under the sun. I was asking for basic supplies, and he said, go to Target or St. Paul Book and Stationery and get what you need. And I think I did it once. I mean, I went, almost never took advantage of it. But that's unheard of. And, you know, that's never happened to me before. Where it
happened to me once.
You did? And this principal also gets taken to the woodshed on a regular basis by the superintendent.
Yeah.
I think he's very careful with budgeting, but he tends to try to, try to beat the system a little bit.
That brings up an issue, just the whole structure we have in this country of public school, we've adopted from the British, basically, but, you know, you have a superintendent and a principal who oversees, supposedly, the teachers, and you have this hierarchy. I read a few articles that say throw the whole thing out, and, you know, why do you need all that hierarchy? You can have a specialist who would do those kinds of things the principal does, but not the, that power structure, place like that. Mm-hmm.
I heard of a district that hired a company to come in and kind of take care of the financial, administrative kinds of things in the district, and they did that for a couple of years. I don't have all my facts here, but I know that they basically, the company, after a couple of years, voluntarily withdrew.
Yes.
And I don't know all the reasons why, whether they weren't able to make any more of a difference, or if they got things under control to the point where they felt they could hand it back.
You must be referring to Minneapolis.
I'm wondering about that.
Yeah, I think it is Minneapolis.
But right? they're no longer having a private company do that.
No, they walked away from
that.
Not, no, it's been sort of hushed up. They brought in C. Peter Hutchinson and they... an independent, the corporation, as the teachers call it.
Yeah, they could solve, you know, have all the answers, and I don't think it happened.
Well,
it's more complicated than I think they expected.
Yeah, I think so, and I think Minneapolis is also moving through some stages. That was the official explanation, the district was a real mess when they brought in Hutchinson and the corporation, and they had certain goals that the corporation would get them through. It would be setting up accountability systems and things like this, and now they feel like they need an educator. And they got a wonderful person in charge now. I can't recall her name. She's from St. Louis Park. That I've heard her speak once and just blew me away. It'll be interesting to see what this woman does. She's very good, at least appears very good. And I've heard nothing but good things. They didn't do a nationwide search. It was a unanimous parent. I mean, everybody in the community thinks this woman is top notch. She's superintendent in St. Louis. She started in Minneapolis. Went to St. Louis Park as a superintendent, and now she's coming back to take over the system. So, yeah, all the details are not on that one yet, I don't think. My wife, as a teacher in that system under Hutchinson, was impressed by what they were doing. And didn't bother her at all that they had gone that route, I know.
I was just wondering why they left or what they accomplished. I didn't really get much of the facts on that.
And then one thing I wanted to put under district-wide are computers. If you don't have computers for your kids, get them. I mean, they've got to have them. If they don't have them, they're going to be falling behind a lot of the other kids in the schools. I think that's a given at this point. Computers are in every aspect of our lives and society. We had some speaker at the school that said something like 98% of all writing in business is now from notes. Anything is done via email, done via computers.
As of which age? Because they need to know the ABCs first, and you want them ideally to learn the right sequences too from as early as possible. I hear from a friend of mine, she's a computer specialist, she says probably about the second grade, that's when they're actually ready to learn the tool right.
Mm-hmm. Is that actually doing keyboarding, you mean?
Yeah.
But I think you can have a computer before that.
Oh yeah, my 3-year-old.
Which are you talking about having it in the schools where they actually?
Yeah, well, in the law, I mean, first, second grade. I had also tutoring children. I had some kids who had really problems reading. They were good at writing stories at the computer, but they could barely read it, mm-hmm. So spell it right. So.
Yeah, my son taught himself
basics.
My son is a 5-year-old, taught himself how to add with a computer program. I mean, just by himself. We watched him do it, and we were real curious to see what he would do with it. And he figured it out. My wife sat down with him and suggested how to do subtraction. Picked that up right away, too. He can't use a keyboard at all. He never used a keyboard, except when he sees me use it, then he tries to imitate it. But he does almost everything with a mouse. I don't keyboard. I'm one of these, and I figured I've wasted up to 4 years of my life now because I never learned how to type. But everything is so mouse-driven these days that, except for the actual writing,
eventually you'll just think of the computer.
Yep. So,
but having technology in your home is a real definite advantage for your children.
In seventh grade, most of the projects I do, the completed projects, come in via word processing in computers now.
What about the students that don't have access to that outside? I mean, then it's, I guess it just comes down to offering them the extra opportunity to complete that in school? Or
I do that. Yeah. Yeah, I have the computer lab open after hours for the kids that have to use it there. But I, you know, the flip side, I do believe it's going to continue to stratify our society more.
Well, but don't you see the public schools as being an instrument of the stratification? Yeah, I'm sort of at the other extreme. A lot of people might think I'd be technology driven, but as a practical matter, I really don't think that there's much that a kid gets out of the computer except for learning how to keyboard. And as you say, I think that's a skill that has a value right now, but I think 5 years from now, it'll have virtually no value.
Keyboarding? Or, yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
I think the computer, just intuitively knowing how to use it, the younger they get exposed to it, the less afraid they are of it. And they just, like you're saying, there's our site's going to be technology driven, and the more experience they've had with it, knowing how to use, how to access. I think it's a matter of knowing how to access information, because that's really where our society is going. I mean, information is booming out there, and computer technology is the way that we're going to get a handle on it.
But it changes every day.
It does.
And it becomes more simple every day, and becomes different every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think the amount of time that's being consumed on it is far out of proportion to the value of what they're getting from it. But that's just one opinion, although I have heard it from other people in the technology industry.
Well, if you go to schools, I'm not sure how much time your children are actually spending on the computer. I teach second grade, and we don't spend a lot of time. In fact, I have a lot of writing going on in my classroom, but I really don't have my second graders using the computers to type their stories because it's too time consuming. I don't feel the value is there. I think you have a real good point, you know, technology is a whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
But really making sure that how we're using it in the classroom needs to be very valuable, well spent. Just to do it for fun is not, in my opinion, a good idea. And in my son's high school, he gets frustrated because he doesn't get a whole lot of time on the computer. He uses our computer at home a tremendous amount. But they don't actually use it a whole lot in the schools. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't think there's a lot of time being spent on the computer that's been harassing it.
There's a lot of money being spent on
that's,
it, and I think it's a real focus for school boards and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a
in response
an erroneous
to,
focus.
In, but it is that in response to the emphasis that's put on it by our society? Or
I think it's the lack of focus that's put on testing of the knowledge that the kids need to have to graduate. They're focusing on every other thing that they can find to focus on rather than focusing on meeting standards.
But the software for technology and the quality and the value is getting better all the time.
Absolutely, I don't dispute that.
And so I think they can learn a lot through via the computer and get a lot of valuable learning happening. And for a lot of kids, it's a lot more motivating. Mm-hmm. So
There may be a whole group of kids who have no access to it anywhere else.
Or we have to know in school.
That in the public school.
But it also means teachers need to be well trained, and we need to have good quality stuff that we're using. So it's not a waste of time.
Yeah, I had an interesting thing happen this year. Because we're moving, they closed the library on me the last month and a half of school, which really ticked me off.
Why?
Because they closed our library. Because they had to move it to the new building.
Well, didn't they take all the books away at the same time of all the students that they were trying to do their homework with, or did they manage to avoid that?
Well, no, they took everything. I fought this all year.
I meant the textbook. I was being
deceived. Oh, the textbook. The way I teach the textbook is secondary.
Yeah.
And my classroom is project-driven all the time. And really, they could have taken my textbooks away from me and done a lot less harm than closing the library down on me. Because the last month of the year, I have about a month-long project. It's called my year-ending inclusive project, where we take little bits of what we did all year, put it into a final project, and I use the Civil War as the basis for it. And they took this away from me, and I said, how can I do this? And they said, oh, do your project in April. I said, okay, we'll do the Civil War in April, and we'll do the events leading up to the Civil War in May. and that didn't fly. So I had a student teacher, so I had my student teacher take 10 of my top students, and I gave them 2 days in the library. I pulled them out of all their classes, and I said, I want everything in every book and every magazine that has to do with the Civil War photocopied. I gave them a photocopier in there, and they went through and did a complete search of the library in 2 days, and they got everything. And we filled up two or three three-ring binders with all this stuff. Then we compiled the stuff for the kids. I got to the project. Before they started their projects, we went to the internet lab for 2 days. And I had all of my classes print stuff off the internet. And we had five times as much stuff. Most of it, I didn't read all of it, obviously, but I looked through as much of it as I could. It was pretty good quality coming out of colleges in various places. There was one site on the web simply for Civil War stuff, and within that site they've got like 1,500 other sites. My kids, after 2 days, they'd scratched the surface, and we had way more than what was in our library. And then from that point, I had all this material, and I took them in the library, and we used the tables. They didn't take the tables away yet. And they were the best projects I probably had. But incredible information. I mean, and there were stumbling blocks. I had a student that did a search on the Secretary of War during the Civil War. And she's reading, she got like 10 hits on that. She's reading through it. And the fourth one down, I mean, this was the nicest, most naive seventh grade girl you ever saw. The fourth one down was a prostitute in Washington, D.C. who had the same name as this guy, and she specialized in oral sex. And my policy in there is, if you get into something where you're not supposed to be, if you raise your hand and let me come over and see it, I'll get you out. Yeah. And I came over, and she was just as red as could be. And she said, "Mr. Smith, I know I'm not supposed to have this stuff on my screen." And she didn't go into the site at all, but I just kind of said, "Well, use some of these other ones, you know, don't go into this." And you catch kids being inappropriate. I caught a kid in the Playboy website, and as soon as he saw my student teacher coming, he got out of it, and my student teacher, knowing something was up, went over, and you got the
forward, backward.
Yeah, So he went backwards, and there it was, and he was suspended for a couple of days. For that, it was the only flagrant violation I had all year with that, but tons of information. But the question I ask, are the kids reading it critically? Because there's a lot of garbage on the net as well. And that's my goal over the next couple years, is to figure out how to get kids to use that information and figure out what's good and what's junk. Because there's a lot of junk on the net as well, but it's where we're going, it seems like.
I was thinking there's a lot of junk in books and textbooks, too, so it would be a
help. Oh, but not this kind of junk.
Not the inappropriate stuff.
Does the word graphic come to mind?
Oh, God. Well, if you type, I learned this year, you don't type the word adult with anything, because all you get is triple X-rated stuff on the net. I mean, that was a revelation for me. And the kids, as a whole, were real good about it. We tried to, there were three adults in there with 30 kids. We tried to monitor it as close as we can. And, you know, all you have to do is wait for the giggling to start, you know, and you know. They do, yeah.
We really aren't allowing our kids to use the internet in our building yet until we come up with a policy and a way that we can really regulate it. Because we can imagine, schools can get in a lot of trouble here with this issue, and so we have to be very, very careful. We don't want our kids exposed to this sort of thing anyway. Mm-hmm. But what we did have an instance where our technology assistant was working with only three children on the internet. They were doing research projects for animals, and this one boy was looking up swans, innocent enough. Well, there is a group out there, a rock group, that has swan something to its name, and has some rather awful lyrics that this kid got into. And that was done, she had turned away for like 2 minutes. You know, three kids, one adult, very little time, and that's what happened. So it's something that schools really have to go into carefully. I have a friend who has spent all her summer working as a part-time job, going through the internet and screening stuff like this, and compiling things that are safe for kids that have no links to this kind of thing. She said it's amazing how much wonderful material you will not be able to let the kids access, because one word would get them into something else. But that's one attempt to make this safer for kids.
And there are major companies trying to develop software for that. I'm trying to think of they have the little magazines,
There are blocks you can put on and stuff like that.
Yeah, and but this they're trying to come up with a kid friendly system. I can't think.
Well, there's a lot of screening software that's available in some ones better than other, but I don't know if any it's adapted to multi user settings. Mm-hmm. I would think that there must be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Something for them servers.
Scholastic, that's it.
Oh.
Junior Scholastic.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're working on some software too, of just an information database, I think, of where kids can't access the little things they're not supposed to. One other thing I wanted to bring up too. Maybe I'll turn the next page. District-wide, perhaps. This is my pet thing. We've got teachers in my building and other buildings that have been teaching for 25 or 30 years. Nobody listens to them anymore. They seem like they're there doing their job. They're tired of being on the committees. And when I have a problem, those are the teachers I go to. They've been around the block with kids. They know kids inside and out. And I see them as just a wasted resource. I'll call them master teachers or whatever you want to call them. And I know Minneapolis tried to do some stuff with a master teacher mentoring new teachers. But often seems like we take our young teachers out of school, throw them to the lines in the classroom, and after 2 or 3 years, if they don't quit the profession, they kind of get their act together. I think there's a real chance for more mentoring than we do in the schools with the folks that have been around. I work with a wonderful English teacher who's taught for 29 years, and she's goofier to kids. I mean, she's just not burned out at all. She loves her job. Is just a font of wisdom. When I see her working one-on-one with kids, it's like, boy, I got a lot to learn from this person. But all she does is teach English all day long, and maybe that's the best place for her. But it seems like we could learn from her as teachers in a profession.
Being someone relatively new to the profession, I feel like there's so much negative publicity to teachers that have been teaching for so long. I've hardly heard stories about what you're talking about. Hmm. Those people that are still so excited, and you know, after 20 or 25 years of teaching, the things that I've read are, you know, programs that are being put in place to mentor teachers that are tenured but need some help still, you know, getting them kind of more motivated and stuff. And so my perception is that there's a lot of focus, and it's just a personal belief of mine that it's easy to focus on the kind of downside and to point out what's wrong instead of kind of raising up those who are, you know, still putting in all the energy and would be wonderful mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel it would be easy to find a number of teachers that would be willing to give their time to new teachers?
That's a good. I think that's a great question. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And for the very reasons that you state, I know some of our older teachers feel pretty beat up.
Yeah.
By the kids, not just by the kids, but by the system.
Yeah.
And don't want to, you know, they'll say, oh, this is another thing that you're going to let us do for 2 years and drop again, because that seems to be a thing in education too. Let's try it. We try it for 2 or 3 years. The district is behind you 100%, and then funding disappears. One of the things we're doing in our district is going to teaming at the junior high level, which is nothing new, but I think it's real effective. The first year we did it, I was on the team that volunteered to do it in the seventh grade. So we did it with nothing extra. We just said, we'll do team. We'll start doing this idea of teaming, perhaps towards a goal of being interdisciplinary. The second year, they gave us a little bit of support money for it. The third year, they started building a middle school based on that concept, but then we lost all of our funding. And it's like, hey, we just put in 2 years, not charging you guys anything with tons of extra hours, and now you're not going to give us a bit of change to do it like you did the year before. So to be honest, we didn't do anything this year with teaming. We had our team, but we were angry about that. Now next year, we're getting a prep hour, just a team, with an additional prep hour. So next year, I'm with this wonderful group. I couldn't speak more highly of the teachers I work with. Next year we'll give it our all, but after 3 years and the district giving us lip service but nothing else, we're tired of it. And I'm afraid that might be the case with some older teachers, and that's a big change I would like to see. Because in our district we have so many that would be great.
Well, you're talking about dreaming, right?
Yeah.
I think it is in Europe where they have a system set up after a teacher has completed her education, or his. The first year that they go into teaching, they are connected with another teacher, and this teacher is with the other teacher in the classroom. So it's like basically two teachers in a classroom. And that full year, they get paid, but they are working under or with this other master teacher who's been around the block a long time. And I thought to myself, if I had had that experience, if I could have worked and watched, I mean, you learn so much by watching other teachers. Mm-hmm. And you never get that chance anymore. I mean, I wish, you know, if I could dream, I wish I could spend, you know, a certain period of my year going to other classrooms and just working alongside with and watching another teacher work. It's inspiring, and I think your eyes are opened to new ways of doing things. I think it also forces the teacher whose classroom you would be involved with to think about what they're doing, because when you have to explain it to someone else, you have to really think about, well, how am I doing what I'm doing and why am I doing what I'm doing? Because I'm a student teacher, and I've had one before, and when you have a student teacher come in, you really, really think about, well, how? You kind of have this other self of yourself watching yourself mm-hmm. and thinking about what you're doing. But I think having someone for a whole year going into a classroom before they're allowed to go on their own and teach others, you know, independently, they have really been nurtured along. And I think that's a wonderful concept.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it'd be great. I never knew how much I knew about teaching until I got a student teacher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for the same reasons that you say. And so much that you take for granted after teaching for 10 years, the new teachers come in and, you know, why did you do that? You know, why do I, when I go over to talk to the student on the side here, do I always go on this side when I'm helping them instead of going on the other side? Because I don't want to turn my back to the class. I mean, just little things like that, that the student teacher, it blows them away. That
and I some think any master teachers, those who are really, really good, are more than happy to help and work with other teachers. They're a teacher, you know? Why teaching adults versus children? I don't think it makes any difference there. I think they're more than delighted to do that. And I think if you had that going on continuously, a lot of the teachers would be becoming master teachers because they'd be working and learning from master teachers all the way along. And not just maybe that first year, but getting a chance to go back in after so many years, making it a requirement even. You know, we have requirements for continuing ed. And we have lots of classes we go to, but there's a whole lot, it's just so different to be able to go and actually observe teachers. And I've had the chance to do that for my own children once in a while. I've gotten into go into their classrooms and watch teachers, and I'm always so impressed, and I learn so much. That would be my dream.
I like it, yeah.
Our junior highs are organized on interdisciplinary teams, and although we had one really good year and one really bad year, I think we've seen both sides of it. And it is really exciting when it works well. Mm-hmm. And our junior high went on a block schedule where it's kind of a capital E-shaped building, and each hall had a team in it for the different ages. And the basic period was 90 minutes long. But among those four teachers, you know, maybe the social studies teacher had some big long project. They did one on immigration, and they actually set up an Ellis Island experience for the kids. Well, that teacher got, you know, 3 hours one day, and the science teacher got 30 minutes mm-hmm. or nothing. And then the next day, so that their hours all even out. But it makes teaching so much more creative. Mm-hmm. And as they were doing their immigration project, then the English teacher would bring in, and each kid got a little like 3x5 card, and it would say, you know, your name is whatever, and you came from this country, and you're this old, and this is your skill, and then you had to write yourself an identity and go through Ellis Island and see, you know, would you be accepted, would you not be, you know, can you create an identity that would be one the new country mm-hmm. would want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot more exciting kind of programs. But then the following year, I mean, those teachers clicked, but the following year, teachers didn't like each other, didn't want to meet together. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was just a horror.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of integration. But man, when it works, it's great.
Yeah, see, I'm on a real strong team and it's worked wonderfully well. And after 3 years now, we still like each other, which is the sign that it works. and that's not the case with all the teams in the building.
Our team started spending holidays together. They became family for each other. I mean, what stronger evidence could you ask for?
And there are some real advantages. For example, I think reading and writing are critical these days, especially because of the computer technology. We need to learn to read critically. I don't teach that as well as the reading and English teachers do in our building, but if I can teach with them. We did one project where the English teacher did how to write the stuff, and I did the research end with them. So I was the resource person. I got them to the resources and let them search them themselves, and then she helped with the kids put the papers together.
Well, sometimes David would write one paper and submit it to both the social studies and the English teacher, or the science teacher and the English teacher, and the English teacher would grade, you know, the grammar, spelling stuff, and the other teacher would grade the content of, you know, how the paper was written. Did it do what it was supposed to do to meet your criteria? You know, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful way to go. I'm always nervous when I'm grading papers because I don't have the English background. And if you've ever read anything, I mean, if you would look at my notes right here, you'd fall. I don't spell well. I got something published this year, so I can write, I guess.
I don't know how much time we have left, but part of what I was hoping is to find out what people's dreams were. I mean, I think it's part of what we came here for. You know, it was just, what is your dream? I mean, what do you dream for your kids if you're not a teacher, you're a parent, you're coming from that angle? Or as a teacher, what are your dreams for education? I mean, what is it, if you could have anything, you know, what would it be?
Let's make this the last part of the discussion because we need to, I think that's a great way to end it if anybody wants.
A teacher who likes your kid, I think, is really important. But it's hard to sort of figure out how to make that happen. You know, how do you get teachers who are going to like your kid? Because I think teachers who like kid take more interest in them. One of my biggest frustrations in my kids' elementary school career is my oldest son in second grade, who was bored to tears. I mean, he was a smart kid and he knew all this stuff. And we went into a conference and we asked the teacher if she could give him something more challenging. And she took out the second grade curriculum. Well, essentially, the teaching goals, and said, this is what we're supposed to teach in second grade. Ba-da, 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 ba-da. That's what we teach. You know, if you already knows that, that's too bad. And, you know.
Not all teachers are like that.
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh. It's kind of like, you know, he lost it in second grade. He's never really gotten it back. He never really has enjoyed learning since then. Because he learned that school was boring. That was the first year he was bored to death. So somehow, I guess, a way not just to teach the average kids, but to try to ferret out those kids who do learn quickly and keep ahead of them somehow. Even if it's lateral movement. You know, you don't need to move them on. And that was what she said. If I start teaching third grade stuff, then what's a third grade teacher going to teach? If I start, you know, follow, and you just end up with a massive problem. But I think there's a way to go laterally with kids like that, to give them more challenging work on the same subject that's maybe not third grade work, but expands on their second grade stuff that forces them to think. And now he doesn't want to think. He doesn't want to do. He's in seventh, going to be in seventh grade, and he doesn't believe in homework. He slops everything to get through it. And I can trace a lot of that back to second grade because it wasn't like that before.
I'd like us to throw away grades, the first, second, third grade idea, and try, I mean, this would take a lot of work, but look at it kind of like what you're talking about, at a certain point in the academic career, whether it be, you know, the beginning of every year or whatever, kind of assess where they are and then go with that. An individualized learning plan for the kids who
teach to your need.
Yeah, and look at. I mean, teachers know, and a master teacher, walk in a room. I think for a variety of kids and know what their learning style is, or after working with them for a while, know that this kid's learning style is different than this kid's learning style. Maybe there would be a way of matching learning styles with teachers. And I, you know, we have a kid who's kind of too young for one class and too old for another, and he's been on the fence every year, and it's been difficult every year until December, and then it's okay. And I wish that he didn't have to go through that every year, but he does, and he survives, and he's resilient, and he's okay with that. But wouldn't it be nice if he didn't have to be pegged into a certain age group of kids or a certain grade, if he could just be taken where he is to the end of the year?
Do you do portfolios, or do you have strictly grades? I mean, in our grade school, they have portfolios, and our grade card is, you know, there have to be some levels, and there's an expectation that they will learn X in whatever grade. And so ours is, you know, meets expectations, doesn't meet expectations, exceeds expectations. That's our grade school card.
Yeah, and a lot of schools are moving towards that.
Are you talking multi-level?
We just think
a 1-2 multi-level.
What I hope that my children learn in school is to learn how to learn, to have fun learning, that you never end learning. That, I mean, even now, myself, I'm trying to show them that I'm still learning. My husband and I, we do read a lot. What I hope to is that, and I'm trying to instill that in my children too, and the kids that I deal with in the school, is that to try to see things, I mean, just open up your antennae wherever you are, ask questions. And later on, also when you get into junior high and high school, when you touch, math and science does not have to be scary. It was very scary for me. My daughter just had a great experience in third grade. She wasn't very happy and very secure in math. And that teacher she said, "Mom, Mrs. Henderson really makes math interesting. She made some really neat games, she really caught her. I mean, she loves math now." And also seeing sometimes having a European background, having worked for an American company in Europe, and seeing who's being sent from the United States, we had Stanford and MIT educated engineers who would come to Barcelona and have no idea where to place the Mediterranean Sea. It's just a little thing, but when you work, but it's just a little thing. But but it got me thinking. If you want to be, I mean, in obviously the United States, you are a world power. But if you also want to do business internationally, I've seen it in Japan too. When I visited, a friend of mine lived there, and if you want to do business there too, it helps when you know a little bit about the Japanese people. You don't have to know Japanese, but pay attention. I mean, just the way you teach geography and history too. I mean, here some people, sometimes I feel they don't even try to trace the roots and you hear, "Oh, history, man, all you have to do is just learn dates." Maybe it's because of the history teacher I had. I mean, it's still one of my hobbies. So I really hope that my kid, I think that's really important that you learn how to learn. And my husband also says that. I mean, he remembers one teacher who really taught him how to learn, the techniques for it, and just joy in learning. And maybe then we don't get these kids who say, "School is boring."
Yeah. Well, great. We really need to break for dinner.
Yeah.
But
in addition as to how to learn, I would say it's not what teachers want to hear, but my expectation is, because schools are the largest public agency we have, that I don't know how you characterize it, better citizenship. You know, that kids from all income levels learn to be appreciated. Kids of all races learn to be appreciated. You know, the grade school that David was in when he was young, we had lots of different races in, and parents could bring food in or bring in, you know, artifacts from home or whatever. And then that was praised, you know, that this was, whereas I see in our district, which is a very white area, that isn't valued. And I think our world is way too small to say that, you know, she's not pretty because she was German. Mm-hmm. You know what the Germans did a long time ago.
I was afraid of signing my kids in as Alaska Natives, even though they are 25%, because we are in a very, very wide area, and I was concerned there might be some.
Michelle's a Pacific Islander, and she's proud of it, but not everybody receives that, though. Yeah.
Well, you just have a little one, right? Mm-hmm. What's your dreams for her?
Oh, I have a 7-year-old.
Oh, seven, that's right.
I guess I have to agree with Stephanie. You know, I hear so many of my friends that are so unhappy with the public school system, so they're taking on their homeschooling, and we're trying to find alternatives, but I would hope that if Alex did find it, he's getting bored in school, I want it to be to teach someone or myself to teach him that learning can be fun and for him to go and explore other things on his own, that he doesn't always have to have somebody there doing it for him. Mm-hmm. You know, a teacher there. And part of that should be brought at home, too. I mean, I hear so many parents say, my kid isn't getting enough at school. My kid isn't getting enough. He's smarter than that. Yes, well, so what are you doing at home?
Yeah, Marion Wright Edelman calls it assigning yourself. She said, that's a real important thing for parents to do, and kids to do. Well, I want to kind of close with what my son said this morning. He loves it here right now. He's asked us if we could spend a year here. He said, but next summer, I don't know if he can come back because I'm going to be pretty busy doing all my homework getting ready for first grade. He said, so I wish we would all keep that enthusiasm for the reason he seems to have right now, including myself.
Is he going into first grade?
Kindergarten, but next summer he's got to get all the homework done for first grade.
You know what? The whole thing with public schools, because exactly what you're talking about is happening in school districts.
Yeah.
I know. You know what you're talking about, tracking kids so that you don't have to waste all that time in the house. There's an Egan School District that my kids are a part of.
Uh-huh.
I went to a workshop, four-day workshop, and they're doing literacy learning in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got this program. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I want to do this. What they're doing is they've got this reading recovery and these levels of reading.
Oh, we have that.
And they level all the reading. Okay. And at the end of the year, they have to make sure that they start so that they know exactly where the kids are left off. And there may have to be some backtracking a little bit if they lost anything.